Organized crime has changed dramatically since the days when Whitey Bulger's Winter Hill Gang terrorized the city with mob hits, firebombs, and powerful underworld muscle.
The old mafia dons as well are now just that, old and out of power. Last year in Providence, one of the last big New England mafia kingpins was sent to jail for 6 years for extortion.
Former acting head of the New England mafia, Anthony D'Annunzio, faced the judge today in federal court in Providence following a September plea deal on charges of shaking down strip clubs for protection money.
So the Cosa Nostra has lost its power. Whitey Bulger is on trial. So what other organized criminal groups have taken their place? Joining me now to talk a little more about the current landscape of organized crime is Beverly Ford. She's a freelance journalist covering Whitey Bulger's case for the New York Daily News. And she's co-author with Stephanie Sharrow of the Boston Mob Guide, Hitmen, Hoodlums, and Hideouts. And Beverly Ford, welcome to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Thank you.
So let's start with that story last fall. The last New England mafia don, Anthony D'Annunzio, convicted and sent to jail for shaking down strip clubs for protection money. Pretty small stuff compared to the power that the mafia once had in the Northeast. How have the feds been so effective against that part of the organized crime story?
The feds have been tremendously effective against organized crime, what we consider organized crime, like the mafia. But there'll always be organized crime in this country, and I think we're seeing it now in different forms. We're seeing smaller gangs. They're organized, but they're a little less organized than the mafia that we know. Without, you know, they don't have the capos and the lieutenants and all that hierarchy. But they are just as deadly as the mafia that we have come to know and read about.
And let's talk a little bit about where they come from. I mean, if you go to the FBI website, it says today organized crime comes from every corner of the globe. And they list criminal enterprises from African countries, from Asia, from the Balkans, from Eurasia, from the Middle East. So pretty much from all over the world now, right?
That's true. And it's not a specific to one ethnic group anymore. Everybody's kind of got a finger in it.
Everyone. And the kinds of sort of rackets and crime that these groups are involved in, what are they involved with?
We're still seeing the same type of criminal activity. You know, they're involved in the numbers, prostitution, drugs, money scams. It's still the same focus, but what's different now is we're seeing other ethnic groups involved in it. We're seeing Russians, we're seeing Nigerians, we're seeing Hispanic groups, we're seeing all different ethnic groups now involved in what we can now can still consider organized crime.
Yeah. And what do we know about these gangsters? And by that I mean, in the past, people like Whitey Bulger were known to just about everyone in the neighborhood in which he lived. That was certainly true with a lot of the mafia dons and capos. Are there similar characters in the crime world today that have those kinds of reputations?
There are, but the problem is because they're operating in kind of a closed community, it's very difficult for federal investigators to penetrate the way they've been able to do in the Angiulo, the Italian mob, and the Irish mob. And that's because in certain communities, the language is a barrier to have the federal agents kind of getting in there to infiltrate that organization. And also there's a lot of communities are very, very closed. They don't really trust law enforcement. So people don't go, and if someone is murdered, they wouldn't necessarily go to the police and say, hey, I've got a tip for you. Unlike other communities in which Whitey Bulger operated.
Mm. But are federal law enforcers, I mean, are they responding the same way with the same sense of urgency as they might have to the old style of organized crime?
I think they are, but these barriers that are now in place make it very, very difficult because many of these federal agents don't speak the language that these criminals speak. They don't, you know, they're not part of the community that these criminals now operate in. So that has made it very difficult for law enforcement to kind of gain a foothold against, you know, the Russian mob or, you know, some organized group that may of immigrants. We're seeing a lot of immigrant groups, and traditionally that's been the way organized crime has kind of evolved in this country. We see immigrant groups come in, and basically it started as a protective way to kind of shield your family and your community.
Mm-hmm.
And it just evolved into a criminal enterprise.
Yeah. I'm curious, too, if you could say more about the response of federal law enforcement. The war against the mafia was conducted, the old-style mafia was conducted by the FBI. Since 9/11, the FBI focuses a lot of its work overseas on terrorism. I'm wondering if that poses a challenge. Are they spread too thin? Are they still focused on American-based organized crime?
I think you have a good point there that they are, you know, they don't have a lot of resources to begin with, and to now focus on terrorism as well kind of takes away from what's happening here in the United States with organized crime. So I think they may have depleted some of the resources, but they're still facing tremendous problems with infiltrating these different communities.
Yeah. And among the challenges they face, you know, is there still that code made, you know, that we've seen in so many gangster movies where no one rats out their fellows? Is there still that code of silence, of omerta among these various groups from around the world?
Among certain groups there is, and it's likely because they're in a closed community where they don't really go to the police. They may come from a community where they fear the police, so they won't tip off investigators. On the other hand, they're also involved, a lot of these groups are involved in drugs, and that is in itself kind of an opening for the feds to get involved, because if someone gets arrested on a federal drug charge, they're facing a lot of time. And if they want to kind of make a deal, cut a deal with the feds, they can reduce their sentence. You know, if you're facing a 20-year sentence and you can reduce it to 5 years by flipping and giving the feds a lead on a bigger case, then you're more likely to do it. And that has taken down a lot of criminals, and that took down a lot of mobsters as well, that drug connection.
Fascinating. So, Beverly, just in the sort of 5 or 10 seconds we have before we have to let you go, I'm just curious, as you are beginning the coverage of this Whitey Bulger case, what strikes you? I mean, is there a sense that this really is the end of a sort of organized crime era, or how are you thinking about this case?
It's certainly the end of the Bulger era, and I think what we're going to find very interesting about it is the people that are going to be testifying, because we've seen that people who are federal informants, who are in the Federal Witness Protection Program, we're going to see victims of murders, the families of murder victims testifying. It's going to be a really interesting mix. We're going to see the history of the Boston mob in this case, I believe.
All right, Beverly Ford, she's covering the Whitey Bulger case for the New York Daily News. She's co-author with Stephanie Sharrow of The Boston Mob Guide, Hitmen, Hoodlums, and Hideouts. Thanks so much, Beverly.
Thank you.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Remember, you can always let us know what you think at radioboston.org. Send us your comment there or join us online at facebook.com/radioboston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.